Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Dunzo. This is a podcast that explores hookups and breakups of famous lovers and friends, both real and fake, and all the discarded pop culture of yesteryear. I'm your host, Troy McKeady. You guys, welcome to another episode of Dunzo. It is me, Troy McKeady. And I don't even need to introduce this person really because she's truly family here. But listen, Kirby, it is, first of all, hi, Kirby. Kirby Johnson is here. Hi, Kirby.
Hi, Troy. How are you doing?
I'm reeling right now.
Same. Like, I'm spiraling. I'm like, what in the goddamn hell is going on right now? Like, Britney Spears to Mary. I'm reading People. Britney Spears to marry Sam Asghari. Is that how you say his last name? I never know how to pronounce it. Sorry, Sam.
I believe so.
Here's the deal. This headline has me like quaking. Britney Spears expected A-list wedding guests, including Madonna, Paris Hilton, Selena Gomez, and more. Kate Hudson and Gwyneth Paltrow are also anticipated to attend the intimate ceremony today, Thursday. You know you're rich when you have a Thursday wedding. Or actually, is it the other way around? Is it better? No, Saturdays are like the most popular days. Fridays are okay. Thursday, it's honestly like you're just a celebrity and don't give a fuck. You don't have anything to worry about, right? You don't have to worry about people finding a weekend to come to your wedding. So you're like, fuck it. We're getting married on a Thursday.
She's like, if the wedding's on Monday at noon, does that work for everyone? They're all like, sure.
They're like, what else are we doing? We're rich. We don't have a boss. We just do our shit.
Madonna's like, I guess I'll put the blunt down for now.
And the filler.
I woke up to my DMs, of course, flooded with people saying that they're concerned and that they're worried and all the things, which I understand. I just don't even know how to feel.
It's hard.
It is hard
because you don't want to police her, right? Like, I think like this whole situation with the conservatorship, like once, you know, everybody kind of opened their eyes and saw, oh shit, this isn't a conspiracy. This is a real thing that's been happening for 13 years. Mm-hmm. I think people are very, very hesitant to want to police any decisions that she makes because she hasn't been able to make her own decisions in a very long time. That being said, I also think it's totally fair and warranted to be like, we want to protect you. Mm-hmm. Is this the right thing? Mm-hmm. And also like Britney has been through some shit. So I feel like she does need some sort of therapy or someone to help her. Although we understand why she's anti-therapy, why she's medical expert, essentially. So I understand like the confusion. I understand the concern. I understand the like, leave her alone, leave Britney alone. Like I get it all. Every all single of it. Facet of it, I get it.
That's how I feel. Like I kind of understand and I understand also people just wanting to be happy for her and being like, look, she's excited and she's happy and she wants to get married. And, you know, I'm trying really hard to be that person, you know, but like, you know, we've always had our Britney conspiracy theory hats on and it's hard to just take it off, you know? I am excited and happy for her. It just doesn't feel, I just want more for her, I guess.
I know. I think like throughout Britney's life, and I think this kind of goes back to like the Justin and Britney of it all. When Justin and Britney were dating, they felt like they were on the same playing field, right? Like Justin was the mega superstar. She was a mega superstar. They had like this like really awesome meet cute on MMC, right? Like they knew each other and then they both like rose to fame at a similar time. And they had like the same amount of fame for a very long amount of time. And I think for people like before, you know, everything came out, like before, like the tides kind of turned on Justin, it was, Justin and Brittany, I want them back together. And I truly feel like a lot of that not only plays into nostalgia, but the fact that they were on the same level, they were on the same playing field. I don't think a lot of people felt like Justin needed Brittany for fame or for money. Right. And now that we've learned so much about like her finances during the conservatorship, people getting money they definitely shouldn't have been getting, like all, like the last time I think I was on the podcast, I'm like, where's the money? Where is the fucking money? Where is it? So I think with Sam, obviously, you know, he is not on the same level as Britney Spears. He seems like a decent man. He's stuck by her through the conservatorship, which I think is like, you know, I think a testament to maybe who he is as a person. Was with her weathering the storm and getting through it with her. So I think she probably appreciates that. But I do, similar to other people, I'm like, is this the right move? Because she is so eager to like live her life. She wants to get married. She wants to have another baby. Is this the right person to do that with? I'm not here to say. I can't judge. I don't know their personal relationship. And I want to believe Brittany has the wherewithal to decide that on her own accord, right? But also we're super protective of her because people have gone after her in the past and been leeches. So all of the feelings I feel like are totally valid.
I agree. And I feel like it plays into something that you and I had talked about before as well, where it's like, she's really in a place of genuinely not caring if we understand. Yes. She doesn't care if we understand what she's doing. She doesn't care if we understand her posts. She doesn't care if we understand her decision-making. And she also doesn't care if we know what's going on. Like, she really has been like sort of teasing this wedding and watching people be confused about it with no concern. Like, she just doesn't care. And that part of it, I'm like, I really get, you know, I really, like when people will message me and be like, explain this. I'm like, I can't. And literally, I think that's the point, you know?
It's coming together and understanding that we won't understand.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And we're not going to. We're just going to watch and piece things together and never really get it.
Before we get into the topic at hand, I do kind of want to run through this alleged guest list with you, because when I read it, I need to know your thoughts. Okay. So like I said, Madonna, Paris Hilton, Selena Gomez, Kate Hudson, and Gwyneth Paltrow are all, you know, slated to attend. And those are, that's just like a handful of people, allegedly. Mm-hmm. Apparently Brian is going to be there. No Jamie Lynn, no Jamie, and no Lynn, which I honestly would have been dead on the floor if any of those three were like actively participating in this.
Right.
But I'm curious, when you hear those names of like the handful of superstars that are slated to be there, like what's your first thought?
It's like, some of them I totally get. Some of them I'm like, what is going on? Like, what? I'm like, Gwyneth, huh? They must be like DMing about vagina steams or something. You know, I feel like Britney's really in the DMs of a lot of celebrities right now, probably, you know, especially like women, like just talking about things. Whenever I see Selena Gomez stuff, it always freaks me out, because it reminds me a little bit of the conservatorship of it all, and just Selena being this like weird part of it, where she's like the name that they always use to, like, you know, if you know, you know, you know what I mean? Selena is very much a part of the conservatorship content in a sense. So that part of it kind of freaked me out, but I think Britney also does love her.
I think, so when I saw it, like, I didn't think of the conservatorship part of that, right? But for me, I see Selena Gomez as like a new generation Britney. I'm not saying talent wise, like that she can dance as well as Britney or like puts out bangers like Britney, but like, I think the narrative around Selena and around Britney are very much the same. And Britney for the longest time was constantly tied back to Justin. It was like, she couldn't do anything without being like, oh, I wish you and Justin would get back together. And literally like, same song, second verse for Selena, like, oh, I you know, just, you're better for Justin than Haley. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's always, it always ties back to Justin in some way for both of these women.
That's so funny. Yeah.
And so I remember when Rare sent product to Britney and Britney posted about it. And like, Selena was freaking out And so for me, I'm like, I'm wondering like if they've met in some capacity or if like, you know, they had a private meeting and they were able to kind of relate on that level. You know, like I wonder if like Brittany like swapped places with Selena and like the, you know, the timelines were changed. If like Brittany would be advocating for mental health. Like Selena, you know what I mean? Like, I like, I'm kind of like, I know it's like kind of weird to think about, but I'm almost like, I feel like that could have been her timeline. If the press, if the media, if like the general public were way more understanding and forgiving than they were 10, 13 years ago, you know?
That's a really good point. Oh my God. This is like, and whenever you and I like reconnect, it's always like right in the middle of it. Like, it's like currently happening while we're recording always. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So I just hope that we get to see, I hope that we get a really clear shot of the dress. That's all I care about. I just want to see the dress and I just want to see Brittany's hair and makeup. That's all.
I wonder who is doing her hair and makeup. Like, I'm going to be all over that. I need to know, like, is it Melanie Iglesias who... Melanie did her makeup for like her Vegas when she first kicked off the residency. She did this like big Vegas magazine. I'm sure you know exactly which one I'm talking about. And she was the cover. And I believe Melanie did her makeup for that. And I remember being like, she looks fucking incredible. Like, this makeup is perfect. Melanie, and we were talking about this earlier, Melanie was Amber Heard's makeup artist. Isn't this so?
My God.
I know. It's like the web. The web.
It's too much.
So I am dying to know who's doing her hair and makeup. If anyone's going to do her hair and makeup.
Yeah. Yeah. She might go down the aisle with her hair in a bun. We know that.
And black eyeliner, like all around the rim, like the whole thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Then she put on with like the little tiny sponge that comes with like a little girl's first makeup, you know?
Yes.
We'll be watching. We'll be watching all day and all night and all week. We will be watching
like a hawk,
like little hawks, to see if I hope that they're like leaving her alone. But it's like, selfishly, do we want to see photos of it? Of course. If we're just being honest with ourselves, yeah, I'd like to see a picture or two or whatever.
Do you think she's gonna get an exclusive for like a Vogue? Or a People? I know People is kind of like taboo now. Like, People getting the exclusive in People is no longer the thing. It's like, you want to get the Vogue exclusive.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, like, depending on, do we know who designed her dress? Because if we do, I'm guessing it's a designer. Like, it has to be.
I think it's Donatella.
Okay. That's what I was thinking. I was like, is it Versace? Like, so, I mean, there's no way that this is not going to be covered in Vogue, right?
I know. Like, Donatella has to have helped her work something out.
Yes. There's got to be some just like epic photo moment with her in the dress, her getting in the dress, like her and Sam. Oh my God. Like, I feel like we're going to have to do like an emergency live tomorrow like, okay, let's break it down.
Like, we got the photo, we got the picture, let's break down every single thread through this dress. But as you mentioned before, we do have a topic at hand today, which I am very excited about. I can't believe that I've never talked about this on the podcast, but I haven't. And we're talking today about Miley's Bangers album.
One of my favorite albums.
Like, honestly, an era in pop culture. Like, tell me where you were in life and what was going on when this album came out for you.
Oh God. Okay, so 2013, I had just started working at Pop Sugar. I was like kind of getting into the flow of like making digital content. I was living in LA, and literally anytime I hear this album, I cannot not think of Beecher's Madhouse. Surely you are familiar with Beecher's Madhouse. It was truly chaos at any given moment. It was at the Roosevelt Hotel. There was always some kind of like weird performance going on. I mean, like, I would see like John Hamm and Hayden Panettiere and the Jonas Brothers and Lucy Hale, like always at Beecher's Madhouse. It was wild. And like Chuck Bass, Ed Westwick, like all these people. So at this time, it was just like, I remember it being like almost like a party era for me. So this album could not have come out at any better time. Like when I hear bangers SMS, like I'm like, I'm getting ready to like go and wait in this dumb line and then get escorted to a table at Beecher's. That's what I think of.
That's honestly perfect for this album. Truly. Like, that's truly the vibe. It's very much, you know, it's peak indie sleaze Tumblr era, that sort of like part, like Polaroid photos of partying vibe.
Oh my like god,
you know what I mean, like glitter everywhere and you drinking like a PBR in a photo vibe, just like that, you know, it's such hyper that time.
Yes,
same for me. This was a real like partying time for me. This was like a time in my life when I was like going out a lot.
Yeah,
I was drinking a lot, like I was like partying a lot during this time, and that's same. What this album makes me think of, just like the embrace of party culture in 2013.
And it was huge for her because she had done, you know, Can't Be Tamed, and that was kind of like the Disney girl breaks out of the mold moment. But then she like, you know, chopped off her hair and went platinum blonde. And I mean, for me, I also think about this album. I think about the press that she put in the work. She was everywhere doing every performance she could. Obviously we think of the VMAs with Robin Thicke and like that whole fiasco. I mean, so many different things that she did to promote this album, which is like, I think why commercially it was very successful for her. Yeah. Because like you couldn't not hear a song of hers.
Yeah, it's always really put me in the mind of, you know, obviously like there's the conversation of her like appropriating Black culture in this album or whatever.
Yep.
And it's always put me in the mind of Christina's Stripped.
Yes.
Like so much in so many ways. And people are always comparing Miley to Britney, which they have every right to. But I think, you know, as far as this time period goes, this was way more of a Stripped ex-Tina thing.
Totally. And,
you know, where Christina appropriated Black culture in a more like I'm this cool, like Afro punk Erykah Badu or something. Like, I'm, you know what I mean? Miley was more like, Miley gave you like girl drunk at like a college party vibes appropriating Black culture. You know what I mean? Like, it was very like 21-year-old party girl, sort of messy, but also very talented, just a mess. It feels like the album of a 21-year-old girl.
Yes. And Christina's Stripped for me felt more sensual, like R&B, while Miley was definitely like hip hop. Like she worked with like this album. I like had no idea who Mike Will was.
I'm
like,
you do now.
I cannot not think when I hear the name Mike, I think Mike Will made it. Like, I'm not.
Literally.
I'm like, who the hell is Mike Will? And then I'm like, oh shit. So obviously she had like collaborated with him in the past. Like, he was like a heavy influence on this album. I like read she also, you know, worked with Mac Miller on this album. Pharrell. I can't wait to talk about the Pharrell influence.
Me too. Oh my god.
Which is like I love when they work together. Like, anything they do together, I'm obsessed with. But yeah, it's literally like drunk party girl.
I'm
basically like saying like fuck you to everyone. Like, you thought I was gonna go off the rails. Okay, well, we're gonna talk about Molly, we're gonna talk about doing lines of coke, we're gonna talk about perp, like we're gonna talk about literally like all of these things.
Let's get into the tracks. Let's start with Adore You.
I just, hey, that's like what I think of in my head. That's like,
I know,
this is such a beautiful song. In my humble opinion, I know everybody around that time, it was like 50 Shades of Grey 2 had come out. Like, I think maybe 2014, was it 2013, 2014? I can remember, but that song from Ellie Goulding and everyone wanted that song to be their wedding song. I'm like, Adore You is not getting the respect it deserves. Like, such a gorgeous song. I remember everyone was outraged because the music video looked like a sex tape. Like, people were like, is this supposed to emulate a sex tape?
Yes.
And like, of course, Miley's like making such a beautiful song like this, like kind of in your face sex moment.
Right. I know. It's It's funny, like, I think Adore You was such a perfect representation of this album, because for one thing, the ballads are like the strongest thing about this album, which people never talk about. It's not even really about like the big bangers. It's about these like highly emotional, really vulnerable ballads that she writes, and it's all different kinds of ballads. There's like power ballads and guitar ballads and electronic ballads, and you know, there's like meatloaf theatrical ballads. It's like it's a real vulnerable, emotional album, but it's known as a party album, which is interesting. Like, I even when I was listening to it this time, I was like, God, a lot of these songs are really sad.
Yes, when I was prepping for this too, I was like, oh God, I fucking love this album so much. Like, every song to me speaks to me on a different level. But what I really love about Miley is an artist. I think because of her theatrics, people write her off, and they also write her off as Hannah Montana still. But she is one of the most powerful vocalists I think we have had in decades.
For sure.
And I think that her voice stands the test of time, and also her art, like the way that she writes these songs start to finish, you know, the original, not the deluxe album, but like starting with Adore You and ending with somebody, hold on, what's the track?
Called? Someone Else?
Someone Else. And ending with Someone Else, like, this album tells a story. So while you do have like the bangers that you're dancing to and having fun with, when you really listen to the meat of these songs, she's going through like, I'm happy and in love, to I'm just wanting to have fun and figure out who I am, to shit, this isn't gonna work anymore. Like, she's like almost like as she's writing these, figuring out like her relationship is about to like disappear. And then, you know, because her and Liam had broke up in 2010 at that point. So,
yeah, and I'm glad that you brought up her voice, because I feel like one of the things that I love about Miley is the journey of her voice, and us being along for the journey of Miley figuring out her voice.
Yeah.
And, you know, coming to terms with the fact that she kind of has this really unique, you know, very interesting, kind of weird voice that's really cool. Yeah. And I feel like when she was younger, they tried really hard to train her to sing like a traditional pop star. And she could, but not as well as she does when she leans into her actual voice. And, you know, Bangers is like, she wasn't fully there yet. She wasn't doing a lot of like that weird Dead Pet stuff with her voice yet.
Yeah.
But she was getting there. And Adore You is a good, I think, representation of that. She's like in her low register, you know, like, it's just... And I also, I guess my favorite thing about Bangers, before we even like get super into it, is that it feels like her intention with this album was to keep you guessing. So you're not really supposed to know what kind of song is going to come next. And it can be a country rap song, or it could be a power ballad or whatever, you know, and to open with this beautiful love song is like crazy.
Yeah, I definitely didn't expect that or anticipate it when I first listened to the album. And I think that, oh, dang, I had it on the tip of my tongue. I can't remember. I'll bring it. Oh, she got rid of her entire team before recording this album. Cause remember, she was going to go into like film. She was going to go like really hard on her acting career. And she was like supposed to be like the lead female character in Hotel Transylvania. And she dropped out to like focus on this album. And then Selena Gomez got the role. And she said that she had to like drop everyone that she had worked with previously, because she just knew they were not going to be on board with like a lot of the stuff that she wanted to do, especially sound wise. So I think that is like, it's very clear in this album, like it's a departure from anything else she's ever done.
Speaking of a departure from anything that Miley Cyrus has ever done, let's talk about We Can't Stop.
Okay, I have mixed emotions about this song, because I don't think it's that great of a song. I understand why it was the lead single, because it's an earworm. It gets stuck in your head. And I very much understand now, especially when it comes to Taylor Swift, I never think Taylor Swift's first singles are great. Like anything that I hear lead single from Taylor Swift, it's not a song that I become obsessed with and listen to nonstop from her album. And that's kind of how I feel with this song. If I'm there's probably two skips on this album for me, and this is one of them. I listened to it today to prep, and I was like, God, like the flashbacks of like drinking and like dancing at a bar and just like being with your friends and not having that much responsibility, early 20s, like that's what comes to mind. But you know, this was very much like her declaration, like, okay, we're gonna talk about partying, doing lines of coke, getting some. She really was like trying to, I feel like, break the Disney molds with this particular song.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, kind of piggybacking off of what we said earlier, like this is a real Tumblr. I mean, this song to me, if there were like five songs that represented Tumblr, this would be one of them. Whether it
really be, like, okay, visuals. I wasn't a big Tumblr person. I wasn't like active on Tumblr, so it was like this. This was like a Tumblr moment. Okay, okay.
Yeah, it was a Tumblr moment in the same way like We Found Love was also a Tumblr moment, like visually and also the sound and like. A lot of those like old like Tumblr-y kind of like GIFs where like it's just flashes of scenes mixed with like glitter and like nail polish. You know what I'm saying? Yes. Like this song really represents like that period of the internet to me. And I was reading about how this song was written for Rihanna, and they ended up at the last minute, like Mike Will made it, was like, I feel like this should be a song for somebody who's doing like has like a debut. Like Rihanna singing this song won't really mean anything to people, but somebody debuting themselves, this is going to be like major. And this is Miley's debut, basically. You know, she's kind of being presented as like a new artist, which is wild. Like that whole, you know, her being a former Disney girl, Hillary wishes that she could have been like, hey, guess what? I'm deleting my whole catalog from your brain and I'm starting over, and give me a chance as a new artist. Thanks. And everybody's like, okay.
Troy, we're not going to slander Hillary Duff on this podcast. I'm telling you right now.
No slander. I just think like she probably was like, well, fuck. That would have been nice for me. Thank you. That would have been nice.
But don't you think though, like Hill never tried to shake like an image. You know what I mean? Like she's always been kind of like good girl, right? Like Miley's literally like, no, I curse, I have sex, I do drugs, I'm experimenting with my sexuality. Like I'm not this person that everybody thinks I am, you know?
Yeah. I agree. And I agree with what you said earlier. This is a fucking earworm, and the la da di da di part is manipulative and psychotic.
Yes, yes. I was reading a Billboard review of this, and they were like, they called the song sloppy.
Okay.
And I was trying to figure that out. And I think it makes sense because this song, for all intents and purposes, when I'm listening to it, I'm just like, where are we going here? Oh, okay. 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 But it is that song where when you hear it, you're like, get a drink. Get a shot, do something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it does evoke emotion, which I always appreciate about a Miley Cyrus song.
I agree with that. It does evoke like a Courtney Love kind of vibe where you're like, I want to be drunk right now. Too sober right now. Let's talk about SMS Bangers.
Oh my God, Troy, I fucking love this song. I can't, not just because Britney's in it, but like this song reminds me so much of a Britney Spears song because it's so tongue in cheek. Like she's like, they asked me how I keep a man, I keep a battery pack. I'm like, I can hear Britney Spears singing this. Cause you know, it's just like so tongue in cheek. I fucking love it. This song, when I want to get like revved up to go to the gym or like, get my sweat on. Yeah. I turn this thing on. It pumps me up so much. I don't know what it is about it. I honestly have been trying to figure it out. Cause like, this is kind of like a gimmicky song in a way, like it has all of the different mechanisms to like keep you interested. Like there's like a superstar cameo. You know what I mean? Like there's like all of these things. She's like, when I hear this song, I literally think of her like sitting in the back of an open air Jeep, like holding on to the rails and like standing up and like singing the song, like fuck everybody. That's what I think of when I think of this song. And a lot of the lyrics, I'm like, I do not understand what's going on here, but I love it. I can't help it. It's so great.
I think that's a great way to describe it. It's like this song, like, okay, this is the interesting thing. If somebody asked me, is this a good song? I'd say, no, it's not a good song. But am I going to listen to it? And do I know every single word? And do I enjoy it? Absolutely. Like, it's it's a wild song. It's the weird, it's one of the weirdest songs on this album for sure. And yep. on paper, it shouldn't work. Like, no. it's really, you want to talk about messy. This song is a damn mess, but it works for some reason.
It does.
I like how weird it is because it's like, I think that Miley is enough of a fan of Britney to understand that like her weird music is like the best. You yes. know, Weird Me is the best. Yeah. So it's fun that Miley chose like the weirdest song to put Britney on. And I like that it has like a salt and pepper thing going on in the background. Like, it's just silly and it's fun.
It is like, silly. I think that's why I like it, because it's not taking itself too seriously. Like, yeah. like this is one of the lyrics that Britney sings. I'm flying high upon a bird, acrophobia. Like, what? Like, how did you get acrophobia into this fucking song? Catwalk, flirting with them big dog. Like, and then she like name drops her dad, Billy Ray Cyrus. I mean, so much shit that just doesn't make, they mention a hearse in this song. Like, like, yeah, like make that media big talk. Like, I mean, it's not a good song lyrically, right? Like, it's not, this is not making you think any deeper, but I think right. that's why I like it. It really does. It kind of reminds me lyrically of Piece of Me. I love Piece of Me. Piece of Me is my absolute favorite song of all of Britney's, but like the way that I feel like she's playing this to the media. Like, right. you have no idea what's going on in my life. Like,
yeah,
I don't need $1 million. I have my dad. Like, I, yeah. you know what I mean? Like, yeah. like, I feel like this is like her. Yeah. It's like her Piece of Me almost.
That's a really good comparison. That makes me like it kind of even more. Cause that's the comparison. This is Miley's version of Piece of Me. And yeah, it's meant to be shocking. And that's the other thing, as I try and keep in mind, like, a lot of these songs, if you're hearing them for the first time, they're meant to shock you. Yep. Like, I remember playing this album the whole way through for the first time and being like Miley's on some other shit.
Yeah.
This is crazy. This is like 20 different albums in one album.
Yep.
And I was thinking about that today. Like, Miley really wanted us to be, just have birds flying around our heads while we're listening to this, you know? She was trying to like rattle us.
Yes. Yes.
Let's talk about 4x4.
Okay. I lied. I have 3 skips on this album.
I was going to say, this better be one of them.
I do not like this song at all. I really hate it when artists try to do a country thing when they're not a country artist or not really like actually doing a country album, because it always just comes off like a parody of country.
Yes.
I think that there's good country and there's like white male country, right? Like, you know what I mean? And for me, this, I just like, I can't get into it. I actually do like Nelly's feature on this. I like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's the only like redeeming quality of this song for me. But anytime I get to this song, I'm just like, I can't do this. What are your, and this is like a Pharrell song. Pharrell co-wrote this song, which is upsetting because I know. Typically. Yeah.
I think that much like the previous song, I think Miley probably felt really cool being like, hey, guess what? I made this really weird song and I got Nelly to do it, you know?
Yes.
Like, yes. Nelly's on this, you know, one maybe his weirdest feature, and it's with me. And same thing with Britney, like the strangest feature that she'll ever do, and it's on my album, you know? Yes. That's the vibe it gives. And I appreciate, you know, just for the listening experience, Miley keeping us on our toes, but my God, is this a bad song?
It's
just horrible and it's embarrassing. And again, it plays into, this is an album that feels like it's being made by a 21-year-old girl who is like very anxious and wants to be rebellious and is like stomping down the stairs in a crop top and being like, see, I don't care. You know, it's very that, like.
Yes, yes.
I don't freaking care. I'm going out like this. That's Miley this whole time. Let's talk about Wrecking Ball. Wow.
Okay. The song, I mean, it means so much to so many people. Like, this is like the epic ballad. I feel like when you hear the song, you feel her pain. Like, you feel like this song, and I think it's beautiful. it's not necessarily the song I gravitate towards, like when listening to this album anymore, honestly, because I just feel like it was so overplayed, and it was everywhere. But I think in terms of just epic ballads, this is, it feels very Miley. Like, this is not like a Celine Dion, you know, Titanic, My Heart Will Go On situation, right? But it's epic in a Miley way. And it feel, this feels more like the most Miley song out of the whole, like now knowing Miley's discography, like this feels like a very, like I could, this could be launched today and I'd be like, yeah, this is a Miley Cyrus song. Like, this feels like Miley.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. This is definitely, yeah, I agree. The song that has sort of like woven itself throughout her career, the sound of this song. Like, you can hear this now and be like, for sure, Miley. Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, the interesting thing about Wrecking Ball specifically is it was the first like big ballad to come out of this album, right?
Yep.
And it was like the last place that I think a lot of people thought Miley was going to go with this era. Like, it really shocked people that they were like, oh my God, like this is the most emotional, vulnerable song she's ever released. And
totally,
it's coming from her twerking era. Like, and that also reminds me of Christina. It reminds me of when Christina released Beautiful. And people were like, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, but this is the album where she got her nipple pierced. How could she possibly have a deep thought at the same time?
And oh my God,
people
right?
People were blown away by that. And it's the same thing. People cannot wrap their heads around the idea that she could like write these vulnerable songs about her relationship and also want to like wear a crop top. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Christina Aguilera could sing about, you know, getting mine, getting yours, and like, you know, fuck the patriarchy, and also be like, you're gorgeous and beautiful, and I'm going to sing this in a stunning way. That is such a great comparison. I freaking love that. This is her Beautiful, for sure.
Yeah. And then you also have we do have to talk about He Who Shall Not Be Named, her love of Terry Richardson at this time. She was obsessed.
Yes,
he did this video.
Oh my God, Terry Richardson's a name I have like blocked from memory. I haven't thought about this man in literal ages, but at this time I think it really does speak to like, there was still like, people were talking about Terry Richardson and like the shit that he had pulled, you know.
Yeah,
but he had not suffered any consequences from that. So people like Miley, I mean, when I think of this era, I obviously think of the album cover, but I do think of like the all white background, the red, bright red lips, the slicked back hair, and her like, you know, floating on a wrecking ball throughout wherever the hell she, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
The visual stands the test of time, and it's unfortunate because I do like Terry's work, but I can't support, like, nobody can support that bullshit anymore. You know what I mean?
Right. I know. And like, his aesthetic was, I mean, at this time, like, he was
everywhere.
That Tumblr aesthetic, that was him. Like, he in a weird way created it, I think, with like the American Apparel ads and stuff. Like, he really created that, like, sort of blown out, like, you know, like flash photography thing that was really cool. And Miley loved that. So it sucks that he's so much a part of this time in her life. And so many, I mean, you know, he was doing all that stuff with Gaga for Art Pop, and like, he was every Amy Winehouse.
I'm literally looking at a picture with Amy Winehouse. It's just like, holy shit balls. Like,
he was every, like, you couldn't escape Terry Richardson at this time.
No.
So crazy.
The Rihanna smoking the blunt photo, I'm obsessed with. Rihanna holding the baby. Like, there's so many incredible images. There's Big Sean and Naya Rivera. God, that kills me. We should just do a whole episode on Naya if you haven't already, because I'm obsessed with her and I'm just so sad she's not here anymore. But
I would love to do that.
You know what? Like, you're so right. The Terry Richardson era really does mix with Tumblr era / partying and taking Polaroid photos. Like, literally all of those things are interconnected if you had a Venn diagram. It's wild.
It is wild. And I'm seeing that, you know, that aesthetic is like coming back, obviously.
It is.
The sleaze thing is back. And it just unfortunately reminds me so much of him and like his gross impact.
Yep.
Another song that I skip every single time, Love Money Party.
Yeah.
Oh my God, featuring Big Sean.
So I can get through
word.
I can get through this song, okay? It's not my favorite. I can get through it. My other skip, so like I would skip We Can't Stop, 4x4, and My Darling. I can't do My Darling. Oof. I'm like, this is sacrilege that you're like.
Yes, yeah, very bad.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't need Stand By Me in this format. Thank you. But Love Money Party, I don't know. I say it's fine, but it's really just not good. I really think she wanted to have that hip hop influence, and maybe she was influenced mm-hmm. by Mike Will a lot on this, but like, this felt like a song that was like, okay, we need several rap features on this album to like set you apart. Let's make this song and then let's get someone in there. And that person happened to be Big Sean.
Yeah. And like Big Sean to me, honestly feels like a parody of a rapper. Like, I can't believe that he's like a real, I'm like, is he really, like, he feels like he would come at it like from like a kid's birthday party and be like, hey, what's up, kids? Like, ba 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 da ba 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 da ba. Like, it's very like, I'm just like, is he?
Can I share the most awkward thing that's ever happened to me with a celebrity? It involves Big Sean.
Please.
I went to this Dior fashion show in Hidden Hills, California. It's like basically adjacent to Calabasas. It's very beautiful, but like you had to go out to the BFE from Los Angeles to get there. And like they had, it was like the Dior Sauvage fashion show. I think like Haim performed afterwards. But like, it felt like you were in the desert. It was like, it was a very interesting situation. Okay. So I was there, we were all sitting on these like pillows on the ground, all these people are walking by. And afterwards I'm like standing there with another reporter and I like bumped in to Jhené Aiko. And okay. I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. She's like, no, it's okay. And I was like, you know, like making small talk with her. Big Sean was like right next to her. And I looked at her and looked at him and I was like, oh, hi, I'm Kirby. Nice to meet you. And he like stood there and looked at me for a minute, like in his head thinking, do I know her or do I not know her? And
oh
he was like, and literally he was like basically like bring it in. And I like gave him the most fucking awkward hug. And Janae's like, what is happening here? Like, do they know each other? I'm like, I don't fucking know this man. And I don't know you either. And it was the most. So when you like say like man that pops out at a child's birthday party, that's like literally like what I envision him, because it was so awkward that he was like in his head, like, wait, am I supposed to know this person or have I met them before? And like, should I give them a hug or should I just shake their hand and be like, nice to meet you? And then I'm going to be rude if I have met them before.
Should I ask their name again?
Yes.
He's like, hello, old pal.
Yeah. Hi, friend.
Yeah. How are you? he just is such a cheese ball to me. And like, he's perfect for this song because it's so cheesy.
Yes.
And this, again, is like, I haven't worked on this analogy any better than I did 10 minutes ago, but like, Miley to me during this time is very much just like drunk freshman college girl.
Yeah.
Basement party. Wasted on like malt liquor beverages and twerking her ass off.
Malt liquor.
You know what I mean? Like, she's feeling herself. It's just, it's embarrassing in the way that looking back on being 21 is embarrassing. It just feels like a young idiot girl.
Yeah, 21, not an age I think fondly of. It was bad times all the time.
Now, one song that I'll tell you I'll never skip, and I probably listen to more than any song on this album, but if you want me to be honest with you, is Get It Right.
Same. This is my favorite song on the entire album.
I
love SMS, as we've mentioned, but Get It Right is so fucking good. And you know why? I figured it out. Like, everybody enjoys listening to the song. Obviously, like, the whistling, I think, kind of, like, gets you there. Mm-hmm. But I was reading a review of this particular song, and the writer said, Miley seems to be having fun or is like pleased with herself on this song. And you can tell by the way she sings it, like she's like, okay, this is a fun song for me to sing. I'm enjoying this. It, the whole thing I'm fucking obsessed with. It's just, it's so, so good. It's so good.
It's so catchy. Like you said, it's so, and it's not like earworm catchy. It's just, it's catchy. Like you want it in your head. Like I want to listen to this a bunch of times. I don't feel annoyed by having it in my head all day. Cause whenever I hear it once, I'm thinking about it constantly.
Yeah.
The beat is catchy. The harmonies are catchy. Her voice sounds insane. I love Pharrell's weird like production always. It's just so good. And I remember during like, she had done this like little documentary for this album, like a little press documentary about just like the experience. And I remember her talking about Pharrell and how she had sat down with him and he told her like, look, you are in your like creative phoenix rising from the ashes moment right now. And he was like, anything that you feel creatively, just do it. Like anybody that tells you not to do it, just ignore them and just do it. Cause you're like tapped in right now. Like your third eye is open and like, you should just do anything that you think of that might be cool. Just try it. And I think she really took that advice and ran with it and turned it into a whole concept, honestly.
I agree. And I think too, you know, this song doesn't sound like any other song on the album. I mean, I guess there's not many songs on this album that sound extremely similar. Mm-hmm. But this feels like a major departure, but in a good way. It's like a positive, happy song. Well, the other songs are songs you want to dance to. This one just feels good. It reminds me of, well, I mean, this is after the fact, but like I felt a lot of the Miley influence on Sweetener with Ariana and Pharrell.
Oh, yes.
There are, yes. I think it's successful. It might be successful or, it might be successful that there's like a riff that I'm like, this is giving me borderline? Miley Cyrus. Yes. Yes. Maybe it's borderline. Maybe it's borderline. There's a song and I need to go back and listen and I'll remember it then. But like, I remember every time I hear the song, I think of Miley and I'm like, this feels like Miley light.
Oh, that's a good comparison. That out. Cause I was going to say this song could be like a whole concept for me, like a whole album, like this vibe. And it's that Sweetener. It's Sweetener.
Yeah. Yes, 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 yes.
Oh my God, that's really crazy. That is so true.
I love that you made that connection. That's so great.
We're synced up right now.
We are. We totally are. Surfing the
Crimson Wave together. But no, yeah, I always, and anytime Pharrell has a feature on a pop girl's album, I'm like, I wish this was the whole album.
I know.
I always want him to do somebody's whole album. Like, I want him to do, like, a future Britney album the whole way through.
Yes, please, please.
Let's talk about Drive.
Oh, Drive. Here's the thing. It's like, it's not necessarily, I know I've said this a few times, okay? And I love this album. I love it.
Right.
But I don't know. It's not necessarily like, I'm like, I was listening to her earlier. I'm like, yeah, it's a fine song, but it's not necessarily, I'm not obsessed with it. I'll put it that way. Do you have any like significant thoughts on it? Cause for me, it's just kind of like, it's okay.
Nothing really significant. I mean, it's another example of Miley playing with these ballads and having different kinds of ballads, which I love. I like that this one is like more electronic and, you know, a little bit more heavy. And I did write down an interesting quote from her where she said, I wrote Drive while I was working on Valentine's Day. She said, emotionally, it was such a hard time for me. It is about needing to leave someone, but not really wanting to completely cut yourself off from that person or that relationship. It's a time when you want to leave, but you can't. And it's also about moving on. And, you know, obviously this is about Liam.
Yep.
And yeah, it's just another very vulnerable ballad from her on this album.
I that's so funny that you brought up that quote, because I remember reading that quote when it came out and being like, oh, Valentine's Day, like that's sad that she wrote that song on Valentine's.
I know, her and Liam make me sad just in general.
Same. I wanted them to work.
Me too. But yeah, I'm good with moving on from that song.
Great.
Let's talk about F U.
Okay, if any song is 2013, besides We Can't Stop, it's F U. This song has French Montana on it. And I can't remember if this is like pre-Chloe or post-Chloe French Montana, but like, So I love this song. The song, like, I like hearing Miley just kind of like wail on it. And it really is like how you feel when you break up. So I love it about that. But this song always reminds me of the Victoria's Secret fashion show. Because remember when that was a thing? They, during one of the, I guess, scenes that they did, they had models walking out to this song. Mm-hmm. And they had to change it. Like she curses on the actual track, but like they changed it for broadcast. And so I always think of, like, I think Lily Aldridge, like walking out with these giant wings and just like hands in the air, just like singing the song, you know, it was crazy.
Yeah. This song is so 2013. I guess I had deleted it. Because I was like going to from track to track and I was like, well, I'm missing one. And I guess I didn't like it when it came out and I didn't know that I had deleted it a million years ago. So,
wow. Troy,
I hadn't even heard it in like 10 years. I was like, what the hell is this? It's not my favorite. I'll be honest. It's really, it puts me in the mind of like, if Miley was going to do a version of like, Love on the Brain, it's like her just wailing, you know. Mm-hmm. Love on the Brain, but make it hip hop or whatever.
Yes,
or like make it
a version of that,
a version of hip hop.
Yeah,
saloon western hip hop or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be honest, I'll probably never listen to this song again, but I'm glad that it
okay now the truth has come out. I will continue representing FU for all of the Miley stans out there. Okay.
It might creep its way into the shuffle every once in a while, but aside from that, let's talk about Do My Fae.
What do you think? I need to know your like initial reaction to the song.
I think that by this time on the album, you're just along for this ride. And you're like, whatever comes at me, I'm down for. This song is so insanely embarrassing to me. It makes me want to bury my head deep into some sand. Like, I truly want to close myself off from the world when I hear it. And it's just... I wrote the lyrics down because I just, when else am I going to have the moment to read the lyrics to Do My Thang from the Bangers album?
After you.
Bang, bang. I'm going to shoot him down, baby. Look at me. I'm high up off the ground, baby. Oh, shit. Pass that shit around, baby. That shit true, but I don't hear a sound. I'm a Southern Belle, crazier than hell. Getting wild up in here, getting live up in here, burning up in here, turn up in here. We tear the roof up. We tear the roof up. Now we up out of here. And then this is the best part. We do it. We don't give a fuck. Only thing we think about is turning up. We do it all the way live. So everybody hands to the sky. And then I just cannot get over the second verse of bang, bitch. You think I'm strange, bitch?
Oh, I fucking... bananas
like a fucking orangutan, bitch. Don't worry about me. I got it all arranged, bitch. Mind your business. Stay in your lane, bitch.
I actually, I'm going to be honest with you. The lyrics are so cringe, but that part goes hard. When you're listening to it, bang, bitch. You think I'm strange, like bitch? It's fucking like a fucking orangutan, bitch. Oh my God. I truly, when I hit, now that song's going to be stuck in my head all day because of that part. It is the whole like Southern Belle and crazier than hell. I don't know what they were going for with this song, but I will say I never skip this song. When it comes on, I'm like, okay, we're doing this. We're doing it. I'm in it and I'm going with it. I'm along for the
every
ride.
Every single word to this song every single time. Like, and I'm embarrassed with myself, you know what I mean? But it's just so fun. And you're right, that orangutan part goes the fuck in.
It does.
Like, for no reason, she just really, really goes for it in this song. Like, I want to hate it. I want to not like it. I know it's embarrassing, but I love it.
Me too. Me too.
And that's the name. That's the gist of it.
I love this next song. I absolutely love this song. I kind of wish she ended with this song on the original. Because I just think it's, maybe you're right. I fucking love it. It's such a beautiful, it's like, it's not a ballad. It's like slow, yeah. But an emotional, but it's not a ballad. And I think that's why I like really, really, really gravitate towards it. I also think Miley sounds stunning on this song. I really think that this song, even more than like Wrecking Ball, almost illuminates like her real life and what she's experiencing and like how she got to this point with Liam.
I agree with that. I think it does a way better job, especially at the beginning when she, like, the lyrics are her like going through the chapters of her relationship. I love that.
Me too.
I love the beginning of the song. And it actually, I wrote in my notes that it reminds me of a song that would have been on Beyonce's B-Day album, like Irreplaceable.
Okay.
It gives me like Irreplaceable vibes.
Oh.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. Same universe.
Yes. Yes. I can hear that. Like, for sure. I think like part of it is like, while I feel like Irreplaceable is more like I'm owning my shit and like, you're nothing without me.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is like, if the script was flipped a little bit and she's going like, everybody thinks I'm fucking insane for doing this. And like, y'all are probably right. Cause I don't even know. Like, I'm not confident in this. And I think that's why this, like, any type of like melancholy songs really like get me. I always end up gravitating towards them. Like, any of like the Mac Miller songs on Sweetener, like that Ariana wrote, you know, about him and their past relationship, like I always just end up wanting to listen to those. This is the song that I just gravitate towards. And once it gets to this song on the album, I'll put it on repeat because like some of these lyrics that I'm reading, you know, you might think I'm crazy that I'm lost and foolish leaving you behind. Maybe you're right. Like, this sucks. Cause I don't know about y'all. I've been in this position where you're like, am I going fucking insane for making this decision? Like, you're perfect on paper, or like we had a good relationship or whatever, but like there's something inherently wrong that I can't explain to you and I have to leave. And it just sucks. And I think she was able to articulate that so beautifully on this song.
Yeah. And I actually read that she wrote this about Nick.
Jonas?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. Troy, no.
Yeah, I swear.
This Disney universe, it just never ceases to amaze me. Like, the fact that this could be, I thought this was about Liam. So the fact that you're telling me this could be about Joe Jonas, chapter one, we started happy. The second that you said you loved me, I started questioning us. Are we really in love? Okay. Actually, this makes me feel better because I would rather it be about Joe Jonas, or sorry, Nick Jonas than Liam. Because I want to believe that Liam, I mean, like, she was dating Justin Gaston and then she met Liam on the last song or whatever. And then they started dating. So I'm like, you had to know that y'all were actually in love. Like,
right.
Liam. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for bringing that to my attention.
Yeah. I agree with you. I would rather this song be about Nick than Liam. I like that it's about Nick, and it feels like when you know that it's about him, the lyrics feel a little bit more like childhood romancy kind of thing, I guess you could say. And this, like, the idea of her being like, you know, I left you, and was it the right decision to leave you, and you know, the whole thing. And yeah, I love it. I love this song. High point for me on the album, for sure.
Same.
And so Someone Else is the last song, right, on the normal?
Yes, it's the it finishes the album, and then there's like three deluxe tracks.
Yeah, Someone Else is, I mean, it feels like a perfect album closer for bangers, because it's like half, you know, ballad, half like 2013 dubstep hip hop song.
Yeah.
You know, like, it feels like a mashup of this whole album, I guess. But it's not my favorite.
Lyrically, I like it, but the song in general, like the production, like I do not like this song. Again, I wish that she would have ended with Maybe You're Right. But then again, storyline wise, it's going from I'm confused, am I making the right decision, to like, no, this is done. It's definitive. This is over. Like, one of the lines is literally, I'm hurting myself. I've turned into someone else. I can't help you. Like, it's like the levels of grief almost, you know? It makes sense why it closed with this, but I gotta say, it's not necessarily my favorite album closer. It's kind of like a write-off for me, but the deluxe tracks, do we want to talk about those?
Yeah. I was going to say, do you have any that you want to give a shout out to?
Rooting for My Baby is one of my favorites. Yes. Why in the world was this not on the actual album? Like, let's get rid of 4x4 or My Darling. Get rid of My Darling, for the love of God. Rooting for My Baby. Oh God, what's the song remind you of, Troy?
You know, it gives me like, it's like Stevie Nicks light.
Yes, yes. Thank you. I literally think of Fleetwood Mac when I hear this song. And it's like, it's soft. It's kind of just like, it's kind of unassuming. And then you get into it and you're like, ooh, okay. It's very much like, Dreams. And it also reminds me, I mean, this was pre Kacey Musgraves, but this reminds me a lot of Good Wife by Kacey Musgraves, just lyrically at least.
Yeah.
You know, if you were here, I'd get you a beer and I would hang your clothes. You know, like basically like it's essentially being like, I'm always going to be on your side and do things for you, even though you do not do these same things for me emotionally. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm rooting for you and our relationship.
Yep.
Like, I'm rooting for us. Like, I, whatever it takes to make you happy, I'm going to do it because I see the bigger picture and I love you and I'm rooting for us. Like, we're going to do this. And it's just, it's such a mature song. Like, it feels so emotionally mature in comparison to a lot of the other songs, to be honest. Like, yeah, I mean, I cannot believe that they chose, I can't believe a room full of people heard this and chose to not have it on the album versus some of these songs that made it through. I can't believe it. It's unreal. Yeah, I wrote in my notes, it reminds me definitely of Fleetwood Mac. And then maybe a little Sheryl Crow, like a little 90s Sheryl.
Great reference. Love Sheryl.
You know, a little Tuesday Night Music Club action.
Yep.
But yeah, this is great. I also love On My Own is another bonus.
Okay, wait. Like, hold on. Can I like listen to this real quick? I just need to hear.
Yeah.
I thought I listened to it, but now I'm starting to think otherwise. Hold on.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This is giving me Madonna. I get like upbeat, like, yes, this again should have replaced fucking 4x4 or My Darling on this. I think honestly, a lot of it probably had to do with Miley wanting to branch out and wanting to have more of those hip hop tracks on this album. Maybe they're thinking like strategically and they're thinking to themselves, like, if we're going to submit for a Grammy, maybe we could try to get this in like the hip hop category. It was never going to be hip hop. But you know what I mean? Maybe that's why. Maybe that's why these, like, On My Own and Rooting for My Baby didn't make it to the actual album.
Mm-hmm. Like, we can't risk it by having too many of these like not hip hop songs on the album, if that's like what we're trying to do.
Totally.
Which I get, but On My Own is so great. Definitely, like, definitely Madonna energy. It's like, if Stronger was like a funk heavy song instead of forward, like, it's just really, oh, it's so good. This is a good like workout song. It's a good like just in your head, like, you know, having to like do something, grocery shopping. Like, I love listening to this song when I'm like doing errands or like washing dishes or something.
Yes. And now that I think of it, I would have wanted this song to end the album.
Me too. Because
it leaves you on a happy high note.
Yes. And being like, I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want. I'm going to do it on my own. And I don't need anybody or anything. It's the vibe of this whole album.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know. Do you have any closing thoughts about Bangers?
Bangers. we're here to weather the storm with you throughout these tracks. While I do want to murder some of these songs, you absolutely killed it on other songs. And I think Miley Cyrus is just like a generational talent. Like I truly think she is incredible. Obviously, nepotism aside, like I think she was going to make it regardless. So I'm always rooting for Miley.
I couldn't have said it better myself, honestly. I'm grateful to this album because I think without it, you know, we wouldn't have this version of Miley where she is allowed to pivot and twist and turn and try new things and, you know, try on different drag. Like Miley really leans into her drag aesthetic. And I just think it's cool, you know? This was a really great moment in pop culture. It's messy. It's like the last great era of MTV. To me, like she sort of ended MTV. And you know, it's a fun album to revisit. If you guys haven't listened to Bangers in a while, I highly suggest it.
Turn it on.
I'm grateful for you for doing
this. I'm grateful
for
you, Troy. I love you.
I love you too. Tell people where they can find you.
Okay, first and foremost, my podcast, Gloss Angeles. If you like beauty with a pop culture spin, the intersection of those two things, Gloss Angeles, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Kirby Johnson. It's K-I-R-B-I-E on any platform. Find me on TikTok where I'm basically giving you behind the scenes details on all of your favorite TV shows and films and like what's happening in the beauty department. There's lots of juicy stuff happening there.
Kirby is killing it, you guys. And I gotta be honest, like your euphoria moment was so...
Thank you.
Oh, like that was so good.
I'm trying to get back behind the scenes for season three, so fingers crossed.
Please literally go follow all the things and like specifically follow Kirby on Instagram. Like your stories are so entertaining. I like beauty stuff, but like I love it, and I feel like I know so many things now because of you. So go follow Kirby. And yeah, Kirby, thank you again for doing this with me.
Thanks, Troy.
All right, you guys, I hope that you enjoyed it. I will see you next week. Bye. Thank you for listening to Dunzo. This podcast is a part of the Solid Listen Network. Please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe if you haven't already. Also, be sure to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/solidlisten for exclusive content. You can follow me on Twitter at Troy McGee, and you can follow the podcast on all forms of social media at Dunzo Pod. That's D-U-N-Z-O. Thank you to executive producer Molly McAleer and coordinating producer Nicole Matthew.